I wanted to start this afternoon by reflecting on a little bit why we practice. We do get involved in the kind of the mechanics of practice at times, and sometimes we orient around, am I doing it right, or how do I do this? And sometimes we can lose track of the reason that we practice. We are cultivating mindfulness here, this quality, this very simple, actually very ordinary, really ordinary aspect of our human capacity. It's a very ordinary human capacity, this capacity to know what's happening in the present moment while it's happening. It's just an ordinary human capacity. And yet, the Buddha pointed to it and said, you know, this is a really, really helpful quality. You should cultivate it. It should be cultivated. And yet, he didn't just say cultivate knowing what's happening in the present moment. He oriented us towards a particular perspective, a way of paying attention in the present moment for a purpose. And the purpose that he explored in his own life, and we talked about this yesterday a little bit, in his journey, in his own exploration, he had the question, is it possible to be free from suffering? Is it possible to have the mind be at ease with whatever is happening? Looking around, he saw people doing things and began to recognize that the very things that they were doing in order to be happy were things that were kind of keeping them caught in their habits and their patterns. And so in his own journey, he found that mindfulness was very useful from a particular perspective. And this perspective is connected with understanding suffering. The Buddha taught the Four Noble Truths. There is suffering. There is a cause of suffering. There is a possibility to be free from suffering, and there's a way that we can practice in order to be free from suffering. And this is kind of the whole thing, the whole direction that his own journey took. And he pointed us back to, how might it be possible for us to find this truth? How might that be possible? In these Four Noble Truths, he pointed not just to the truths of it, not just to there is suffering, but with each of these truths, he pointed to a task for us. He said, we should understand suffering. Understand suffering. That is a remarkable thing for somebody who had the question, is it possible to be free from suffering? What he came to wasn't get rid of suffering, but understand it. Understanding as the means of transformation. This is really, I think, a key for us, is that understanding suffering is the key to transforming suffering. Now, understanding here doesn't mean a reflective understanding, doesn't mean that we think about our suffering. We think about, well, why am I suffering? And, well, I know that this happened in my past, and this is what, oh, this is how I reacted, and this is how my family was, and that's a kind of a thinking about. What the Buddha is pointing to in terms of understanding suffering, in my understanding of this teaching, is not a reflective understanding, but an actual in-the-moment understanding. This moment, this experience arising right now, this is suffering. If we are experiencing suffering, this is suffering, and this is how it's put together in the moment. And so this points us to right into the present moment. This question of can suffering be understood points us not to thinking about suffering, but looking directly in the present moment when suffering is arising, when stress is arising, when reactivity is arising, when struggle is arising, different words that we can relate to, connected to this word dukkha, which is usually translated as suffering. When stress, reactivity, unease, dissatisfactoriness, suffering, struggle are arising, can we begin to understand it by being with it in the present moment? Can we begin to understand it in the moment, the experience of it in the moment? We could say understand the human experience of suffering. This really points us to the whole orientation we went in with last night. This, all of us is welcome here. The entirety of our experience is welcome. And instead of thinking that certain parts are bad and need to be gotten rid of, we explore the entirety of our experience from the perspective of understanding it. This understanding begins to transform our minds. So if we were to go out into the world and if we saw somebody on the street who was angry, if we went up to them and said, "Hey, do you know that you're angry?" Probably they'd look at us like they thought we were kind of nutty. It's like, "Well, yeah, of course I know I'm angry." And asking somebody who is angry to notice their anger, if they haven't had a kind of an understanding or a whole framework of a perspective of how to notice their anger, why it might be useful, probably the way in which they would go about noticing their anger would not be very helpful. It would probably simply serve to have them become more caught up in the anger. Because this is the way our minds habitually work. That when we notice something like anger, before we really begin the practice, before we begin to learn of a new way, a new direction, a new approach to practice, when we turn towards a reactive experience, such as anger, generally what we do, or what we might habitually do, let's say, what we might habitually do is to not really get curious about, well, what is the human experience of anger? But instead, we kind of pay attention to the thing we are angry about. And so that's our habitual way of relating to reactivity, is that when we notice it, our tendency is to direct our attention towards the thing that we are reacting to, rather than turning towards the experience of the reactivity itself. So this is a key to the perspective that is useful in terms of understanding suffering, is to begin to be curious about experience that's happening as an experience that's happening, as a human experience. This, as I said, I think this morning I pointed to this, when I was talking about the walking, that this is a way we're exploring experience. Can we begin to recognize what is happening in the moment as something that is happening in the moment? Normally, we don't relate to experience that way. We normally relate to it in terms of something that's happening to me, something that I need to figure out, I need to either hold on to or get rid of or fix or change. We aren't simply curious about, oh, this is an experience that's happening. That's interesting. What's this experience like? That's the perspective of mindfulness, of wise mindfulness, I should say. It's mindfulness from a perspective that supports us understanding something about what's happening in the moment. The exploration of what is the human experience of anger is very different. It is vastly different than being angry. It creates a whole different climate in the mind to be curious about that. And it also does something to our hearts. At least in my own experience, I've seen, as I get curious about my experience, what's happening in this heart, this mind, as being kind of a representative of human experience, it's like this. The mind begins to understand, oh, yeah, this kind of stuff goes on, multiplied by, 7.5 billion or something. So many people on the planet. And we begin to recognize that the patterns, the habits that happen in our own mind aren't just things that happen in our own minds. They're happening the ways our minds work. A thought arises. We think about it. We react to it. We get emotionally involved in it. That kind of description is a human description. And so we begin to recognize that the ways in which we struggle and the ways in which we suffer, we're not alone. And so this begins to open our hearts to recognizing our shared humanity, that we're not so different from everyone else. And we begin to recognize that when other people do things that they act out of anger or confusion or hatred, we may begin to be able to understand, oh yes, that too. They've got their own conditions in their life that's leading to that. As we see in our hearts that these patterns emerge, our reactions emerge based on our conditions. We see, as we begin to understand through this exploration of being with our experience, we begin to understand that it's not just randomly what's happening here. We begin to understand something about how our experience is conditioned. And not by thinking about it. Not by thinking about, this is why I am the way I am. But because we see a thought arise and recognize a reaction arises in relation to that thought and feel the emotion that follows from that, we can see in the moment how reactivity comes to be. And we see kind of the heartbreak, the poignant heartbreak of how much suffering is happening in this world. And so this turning towards experience as human experience supports our own understanding of what's going on in our own hearts and minds, and also begins to open us to understanding how other people, how and why other people are doing what they're doing. And we begin to recognize there can be the capacity for some understanding and compassion for the suffering that's happening in the world. And so we're looking at exploring what is happening in our experience with this perspective. It's not just about the what is happening. You can even think about a simple example like a thief in a house getting, trying to steal something in a house. And that thief may be very present, aware of every movement they're making, every sound they are making. And so there's some kind of awareness there of being present in the moment. But this is not the kind of awareness we are cultivating, because that kind of mindfulness is being cultivated in the service of greed, in the service of taking what is not given, in the service of harm. And so this simple quality of knowing what's happening in the present moment while it's happening is kind of a neutral quality. It can be motivated or directed in the service of skillful, beautiful, wholesome qualities, wholesome direction in our life, and it can be directed out of greed or aversion, out of a desire to get something, to harm. And so it's not just about knowing what's happening in the moment. We also need to understand something about how we are, or how and why we are motivated to practice. And so this morning in the instructions, Pam offered a kind of three-part reflection on practice: relax, receive, and allow. The relax and the receive pieces are really about supporting us to be with what is here. They help us to open to what is happening in the present moment. This is where we begin. We do have to begin with that. Relaxing creates the conditions for us to more naturally be aware. When the mind is relaxed, let's start with the body, because we can kind of consciously relax the body. When the body is relaxed, when we consciously relax the body, it creates conditions that support our mind to relax. And when the mind relaxes, it can be more naturally aware in the present moment. It is often tension in our mind that pulls us into thoughts of the past, or pulls us into thoughts of the future, or even pulls us into thoughts of the present moment. A mind that is relaxed can be very naturally aware of what's happening in the present moment. And so we'll emphasize relaxation a lot on this retreat. Relaxing. And then receiving experience. This receiving of experience, in exploring, we can receive experience kind of in a very broad way, like just settling back and receiving what's obvious right now, what's the most obvious thing in the present moment right now. And that's one whole avenue of practice. And we're encouraging a little bit more of a containment on this retreat, to begin by allowing the attention to connect with the body, with the breathing. And so that's a little bit of a directing of the attention. And yet we can, in the directing of the attention, still have a kind of an attitude of receiving that. And so the breath, for example, right now, you know, if we say pay attention to the breath, that may create some kind of a focus, like you maybe, you know, look at some particular area, maybe at the nostrils or something, or maybe at the abdomen. You may orient to looking at some particular area and try to find some experience there. And that's a kind of a habit we sometimes have around directing the attention to something. And yet, there's another way, which might be just right now, just listen to my voice. You know, just you're listening to my voice. And at the same time as you're listening to my voice, just know that you're breathing. You know, just know that the breath is coming in and out at the same time that you're hearing my voice. That may create a little bit more of a sense of receiving the breath that's already there. Sometimes with this kind of approach of receiving experience, I use an analogy, like a radio, with a radio. The way a radio works is that, you know, there's all kinds of frequencies just being transmitted through the atmosphere. And the radio is a receiver. It receives those frequencies. And then we tune to a particular frequency. And so we tune the channel, and then the having narrowed the frequency, the radio receives the sound or the amplification, the sound waves coming across that frequency. But the radio isn't going out and grabbing those. It's more of a passive kind of receptor. It's receiving what's there at that frequency. We can think of something similar with the breath. It's like, let your attention kind of settle or gather, collect in that area of the breath, but then just settle back and see what comes to you in that area. Not looking for anything in the breath in particular. Being willing to accept what is offered in the breath. This kind of receptive practice can often orient or incline the mind towards a more relaxed exploration of experience. Often I think we get a little bit tight in our practice when we're trying to look at something, trying to find the experience. I'm going to pay attention to the breath. Let me find it. Instead, if we kind of settle back, say, oh, the breath, what can be known? What about the breath wants to come in? What about the breath wants to show itself? This is a more relaxed way of receiving. Again, this is in the terrain of the what of experience. What is happening in experience? So relaxing and receiving are kind of the what side of the experience. And then the allowing. This is the kind of, we are cultivating this capacity, a possibility of allowing what is here to be here as a human experience. You know, that thief walking through the house is not simply interested in being present as a human experience. That thief is interested in doing that for the purpose of stealing. And so this kind of orientation towards cultivating an attitude of allowing what's here is an important part of wise mindfulness. It is what moves us in the direction of fully welcoming all of us, allowing ourselves to know ourselves completely. This is, again, a very heart-centered experience when that's possible. When we think about what it might mean to be loved, to be, what do we want when we want to be loved? I think a lot we want to be seen for who we are. We want to be accepted for who we are. And we can do that for ourselves in a way that no one else possibly can. Essentially, allowing ourselves to belong. And so this practice of mindfulness, this wise mindfulness, brings in this quality of heart, of love, of kindness, of compassion. And so this perspective of being okay with what is happening, with whatever is happening, not rejecting what's happening, not holding on to what's happening, this is a perspective that will lead us towards the possibility of freedom, the possibility of letting go of suffering, the possibility of transformation around suffering. And yet this allowing, I need to say this because I think it's easy to misunderstand what this teaching is pointing to. The teaching of allowing what's happening, what is here. It's not about agreeing with or disagreeing with what's here. I began to realize that as I was exploring allowing what was here, I at first somehow thought I had to convince myself to agree to it, or to think it was good that it was here, or to think that it was somehow, yeah, I thought I had to agree with it somehow, that I had to think that the thing itself was okay, as opposed to having a perspective of it's okay that this is here. This recognition of allowing is a kind of an opening to the recognition that what is here in this moment is already here. It has already come to be. And what we typically want to do is somehow alter that reality that is already here. And that's not possible because it's already here. And so the perspective of allowing is really that of acknowledging what has come to be has come to be. It's here. We typically, when something challenging is arising, we're resisting, we're fighting. If something that we want to hold on to is arising, we're trying to keep it. We don't want it to slip through our grasp. And so we have a lot of tension associated with what's happening in the present moment because of a relationship to it in the present moment. And so the exploration is, can we, for whatever is here, begin to allow what is already here to be here, as opposed to resisting it or wanting to hold on to it? What is already here is here. Resistance is just extra suffering. Resistance creates a tension in the heart, and it creates a kind of a binding in the mind. That resistance creates a kind of a bound upness in the mind that keeps the mind kind of locked into various perspectives of how we've reacted in the past and how we've done things in the past. And it doesn't give us a very free perspective from which to step into the next moment. Because we're not really oriented towards how can I be with this in the best way in order to step into the next moment. We're already trying to change this so that the next moment will be whatever we want it to be. So what I want to point to here is that this perspective of allowing is a perspective of allowing what is already here to be here. But it is not about saying, and I don't do anything. Or I just, you know, it's not about non-action. I think sometimes the teaching of allowing is interpreted as a teaching of non-action. And it is a teaching of opening to what is here, and that opening, that letting go of resistance to what's here, the letting go of the holding on to what's here, creates the conditions for us to more fully recognize what might be a skillful response to what's here to step into the next moment. And so this heart of allowing doesn't create the conditions for passivity. It creates the conditions for a skillful response, a skillful action in response to what's here. That may look very different ways at different times. At times it may look a lot like, you know, maybe like standing up and saying, this is not right, what's happening here. But that would be said without hatred in the heart. It would be said with compassion in the heart. Or it may look like, wow, maybe a good idea to hold my tongue right now. As we open to the allowing, there's a deeper wisdom that's possible to come that helps us to step into the next moment with skillful response. So, allowing sounds pretty good, perhaps, hopefully, maybe. It sounds like a direction that would be useful to head. And yet, much of our practice is noticing, wow, doesn't feel like I can allow this. And so what do we do? How do we navigate this? How do we navigate the not allowing? How do we maybe shift from, how do we turn the minds? Is it possible to train the mind to begin to cultivate an allowing perspective? And what might that be? Can the mind be trained in this direction? And it can be trained in this direction. One very useful exploration in this regard is an opening to there's what's going on in the present moment. Some experience that might be some sight or sound or smell or taste or touch or some thought in the mind or an emotion, something that's happened. And then there is how we are in relationship to that. How we are in relationship to experience. Often how we are in relationship to experience is deeply conditioned and very habitual. We respond to things based on the way that we've been taught to respond by our families, by our cultures, by our parents, by our friends on the playground, by our responses in the past. And so there's kind of our habitual responses are very conditioned and often are kind of unseen. They're kind of below the level of our conscious awareness. And so we may be noticing something in the present moment and have a kind of an attitude or a view or an idea about it, a perspective on it that is kind of below the level of our conscious awareness. This is kind of one of the areas that's useful to begin to see if we can maybe open to in our experience, how we are in relationship to experience can often be missed if we are simply noticing what is happening. And so there's a simple tool that we can explore to begin to get at, well, how am I right now? And that is to just ask the question from time to time. What's my relationship to what's happening right now? What's the attitude in the mind? An attitude meaning, how am I with this? When we are not aware of an attitude in the mind, when we're not aware of how we are in relationship to something, you know, just take a simple example. You know, something unpleasant happens, an itch, for example. And, you know, we're perhaps trying to notice the itch, notice the sensations of the itch, but in the back of our mind, we don't like the itch. And there's a kind of a tension in our mind. You know, we've kind of like, well, the itch is what's happening, so let me pay attention to the itch. But what's actually going on there is that we don't like the itch. It's unpleasant and we don't like it. And if we're not actually noticing that part, then how we are paying attention is unwittingly, in a way, reinforcing that aversion, that dislike. Like we may even be paying attention in order to make it go away. Trying to pay attention. And I've done this a lot with pain. There was sometimes with pain, I began to recognize if I could get in close enough, I could make it all break into bits and then it wouldn't be so painful anymore. And with aversion in the mind, I would dive into pain in order to break it apart so that it wouldn't be so painful. And I could do that. But what I was cultivating there was aversion. Because the how in the mind was, I want this to not be painful anymore. It wasn't a, what is the human experience of this unpleasant experience? It didn't have that kind of balance or allowing in the mind. It had an agenda. I want this to go away. And so checking into our relationship to experience can begin to reveal hidden agendas, hidden relationships, things that may be just below the level of our conscious awareness. So we can just check in with a light question. How am I in relationship to this? And this isn't about trying to figure it out, actually. It's more of a just trying to have the mind be curious about, is there something else going on here? That's another question that sometimes can be interesting to explore. It's like, is there something else going on here? Something that I haven't seen. Anything else happening right now that I haven't quite noticed? What's my attitude? What's my relationship? What's the relationship to experience? We're not trying to figure out the answer. I sometimes describe this tool, because it's a tool. With an analogy, if there's a pond that's a still pond that doesn't have much ripples on it, if you drop a pebble into that pond, you'll notice that there are ripples. The condition of dropping that pebble into the pond creates ripples on the surface of the pond. And very similarly, if you drop a question into your meditation, it will create different experience to be noticed. Often related to the question. And so you don't have to do much. Drop in the question and then just keep noticing. You know, maybe if you're paying attention to the breath and how am I with this breath? Just keep paying attention to the breath. And see what, if there's something else that just begins to come into the foreground. Some approach or attitude. Maybe it's, wow, I'm really bored with this breath. Okay, then you've seen something new. Or, I like this breath. This one feels really good. Oh, okay, then there's a liking that's happening right now. There are four basic flavors of attitude relationship that can be seen. There's basically liking something that's happening. Ooh, that breath, that feels really good. Want more of that one. There's a not liking of what's happening. That breath feels really hard. It feels really tight. Can't it be more easeful? Why does it have to be like this? Might be disconnection or confusion or so something like boredom. It's like almost like just a slight checked outness from the breath. Or maybe in this flavor, some agenda, idea. I need to pay attention to the breath in order to get concentrated, and that's going to help me out. Or I'm told that this is useful, so I'm just going to do it. So you might recognize these first three flavors as being in the realm of the three basic tendencies of mind that lead us into struggle, stress, suffering. The tendency to want to hold on to something that's pleasant, the tendency to want to push something away that's unpleasant, greed and aversion, or delusion. The delusion can be understood as a disconnection from experience. Sometimes we just aren't noticing what's happening. That can lead to boredom. It can lead to spacing out. It's kind of just a more or less mindful place. Sometimes delusion is a little more insidious than that, a lot more insidious than that, where we're noticing what's happening, but we're noticing it with some belief, idea, So sometimes, you know, we can check in to this. A useful exploration can be, you know, what's being believed right now? You know, if in checking into the relationship to experience, the questions, you know, how am I with this right now? How am I with this right now doesn't offer much, you could check in, well, what's being believed right now? Sometimes a belief can reveal itself. And these beliefs can be like filters on our experience, colored glasses on our experience that have us oriented towards seeing things in a certain way, meeting certain aspects of our experience and not other aspects of our experience. So, three kind of familiar flavors of this attitude based in greed, aversion, delusion. And then the fourth flavor of attitude is basically it's allowing. It's okayness. It's the mind that is okay with whatever is happening. Maybe felt as ease or peace, or simply, this is okay. This is not a problem. It might be felt more as a more heart-based connection, as love or compassion or friendliness. Many different flavors of this fourth kind of relationship. In this attitude of mind, the mind is actually okay with whatever is happening. So checking our relationship to experience, basically what we're doing here is kind of allowing what might be just below the surface of our unconscious mind to bubble up into our conscious awareness. When it's below our conscious awareness, it's like the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain, pulling the levers, creating that amazing, powerful wizard that we're terrified of. And what's the attitude? It's kind of like Toto pulling back the curtain and showing it's just a little guy behind a booth pulling levers. So this movement to uncover what's below the level of our conscious awareness, when some attitude or agenda is not seen, it's like that attitude is kind of making our choices for us. It's how we are oriented towards our experience. And sometimes it's as simple as just recognizing it. Oh, what's happening is there's an itch and I don't like it. That's what's going on in the present moment. We may be struggling mightily to be with that itch. And what's the relationship? Oh, not liking is happening. Oh, an itch and not liking. That's what's happening in the present moment. Sometimes that can be allowed. When that not liking is below the surface of our conscious awareness, it's preventing that allowing attitude. It's kind of keeping us in conflict with that experience. But if we can recognize, it's kind of like, you know, if we think about this analogy of filters or colored glasses with these attitudes, it's like the attitude of not liking is like I'm wearing blue glasses and everything looks blue and I've stopped even noticing that it looks blue because I'm so used to looking through those blue glasses. And then somebody comes along and says, hey, you're wearing blue glasses. It's like, really? And then they take them off for us. It's like, oh my gosh, it looks really different. I can see now that I was looking through blue glasses. And that movement of bringing or recognizing, oh, not liking is what's happening. It may not make the not liking go away in that moment, but it can create, it's like broadens the container. It makes a bigger container in which the heart can kind of relax. It's like, oh, right, that's why it's struggling so much, because there's not liking happening. Oh, there's an itch and not liking is happening. Whew. And suddenly there can be an okayness with that. This is like pulling back the curtain. And so there's not necessarily much we have to do, actually, when we check this relationship. And I'd encourage you actually to check this on occasion. And a really good time to check the relationship to experience is if it feels like you're struggling in your meditation. If it feels like there's a problem or it's hard in some way, there is some attitude that is just asking to be seen. Some relationship to experience that's asking, that wants to be seen. And it is possible that allowing that attitude to be seen can be the conditions. It's like then the container gets bigger. That might be the conditions that allow you to step back into, oh, it's okay that not liking is happening. That too is something that can be known. Remember, no part left out. Remember, everything is welcome. Not liking is welcome when it is known, when it is received in this mindfulness. When it's below the surface of our conscious awareness, it's not being received in our mindfulness. It doesn't have the opportunity to be welcomed. It's pulling the levers. And so we're exploring this possibility of allowing things to come into that mindfulness. And so seeing, not allowing, essentially, what one thing we may begin to recognize is, okay, wow, the mind is struggling with meditation. It doesn't feel like allowing. Wow, allowing does not feel possible right now. Okay, what's the relationship? I don't like this. Or I'm confused. Oh, confusion, that's what's happening. Whew. Okay. Can that be allowed? Can that be allowed too? And so beginning to explore, can what we are not allowing, can that begin to be held with allowing, broadening the container? And so this tool, it's meant to be used, I would say, somewhat sparingly. Basically, we are cultivating this connection with the present moment. What is happening? Relaxed, receptive. And from time to time, checking in. Potentially, especially when it feels like there's a struggle happening. And how am I with this? Kind of allowing something new to bubble into our conscious awareness. Now that checking of the attitude may not reveal anything. It happens a lot, actually. Some percentage of the time, I won't put a number on it, but it happens quite a bit that we drop in the question and don't see much of anything, and that's okay. Just continue with your practice. Continue with what you're noticing. Sometimes that happens because something is a little deeper below the surface. Something that's a little bit more hidden from us. An attitude or an agenda that's a little more deeply embedded in our minds. And sometimes it happens when we have this idea that checking the attitude means some kind of hindrance is going to be revealed. But actually what's happening is that okayness is happening. And so sometimes we can try that on for size. If we check the attitude and it's like, huh, don't notice anything. It's like, well, try. Is this okay? Maybe it's okay. Because sometimes that perspective, it's subtle. that mind that is okay with experience, it doesn't often come out screaming at us and say, hey, everything's okay. It's quieter than that. And so this tool, occasionally checking in to our relationship to experience, begins to help us do that deep dive that Pam was talking about last night. Instead of staying at the surface, we start to go underneath, begin to dive into the whole of our hearts and minds, begins to uncover habitual ways that we relate to experience, habitual ways, often out of greed or aversion or confusion, that we relate to experience. And as those are allowed to be held with that heart of okayness, of allowing. You're allowed. Confusion, you're allowed. There is a transformation that is possible with that. And this takes trust. This takes a good measure of trust to learn that as something like confusion is revealed, that the okayness with that has a power to it in and of itself to begin to support the mind to learn a new way of being. And so that does take some trust. And we also need to learn and recognize when it's time to do something. Because sometimes something bubbles up that's like some kind of screaming aversion, like screaming rage that is so strong, it's stronger than our capacity to simply settle back and say, oh, screaming rage. Oh, can I? No. The mind just gets pulled right into that. And so we have to be honest with ourselves about when it is possible to hold something in allowing and when we need to take some action. When we might need to, for instance, redirect the attention, turn our attention to something simple or neutral in our experience, away from that difficult experience. And we'll talk more about those kind of tools as we go on in the retreat. And I really wanted to kind of create the container for this possibility of the allowing, the possibility of this heart that can welcome everything. So let's sit for just a moment. And exploring, relaxing the body, and relaxing the mind, and receiving this body, this breath. Welcoming this breath, receiving what is offered of this breath, allowing just this breath to be as it is.